Welcome to Self-Sufficient.
Self-Sufficient.
What does it mean to be self-sufficient?
It's the longest relationship you'll ever be in.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of the Self-Sufficient Podcast with me, Mihaela. Before I get started, can I ask you to do me a huge favor and rate and review the podcast wherever you're listening? If you fancy giving me a follow, that would be very much appreciated as well. It really helps me reach the right people and grow the self-sufficient community. Thank you. I have committed to releasing a new episode every Tuesday, so I will do that for as long as I can, unless something else comes up that's really urgent and I can't really make any time to record a new episode. But for now, there's going to be a new episode every Tuesday. My idea is once I'm back in London after I pass my driving test this week to start recording episodes in the studio, which means I will have guests, and I'm very much looking forward to inviting my favorite people and creators so I can pick their brains and help you guys deal with whatever issues and struggles that you might be going through in your personal life. Initially, when I was creating the concept of this podcast before I launched it, the idea was to have only interviews. I never intended recording solo episodes. I just didn't really feel comfortable talking by myself for such a long period of time because I'm always afraid of going off track or losing my mind. Not losing my mind, but losing my train of thought. Oh my God. See, this is what happens. But I think the universe has been pushing me to get comfortable before I start doing interviews, because ultimately this will help me when I'm in the studio with someone to feel more comfortable and to have a conversation that flows more naturally and easily. And this happens very often to me. Me and the universe have this relationship where I try to jump into something new and the universe is like, hold on a minute, you're rushing through this and you'll have to go back to the beginning at some point. So it's always forcing me to start slow and build up my pace and then run when I'm ready. And because I'm on the topic of driving, it's like joining a dual carriageway or a motorway and you're on the slip road, you have to build up your speed and then join the motorway. You can't just jump without looking, without adjusting your speed, without indicating. You know, you have to be prepared. Side note, I need to stop talking about driving and giving driving references, but you guys, this is all I'm doing these days, so I apologize if it's too much. Okay, and this is what I mean when I say I can lose my train of thought. Anyway, I strongly believe that this podcast has been about more than just a podcast. It was about me letting go of this idea that things have to be absolutely perfect and I have to feel 100% ready. The truth is, and my most important lesson from this experience, is that things don't have to be perfect. You can adjust it as you go. If you don't get started, you will never know. Because until you bring an idea into the real world, you won't be able to see the cracks and flaws in the idea. And that means you won't be able to fix them, because things don't work the same way in real life as they do in our imagination. So we have to be able to get feedback from others. We have to be able to get more ideas. And the only way to do that is to get started and to put our ideas out there. Because if you wait for things to be perfect and for you to feel ready, you're never going to get started. And I always say this, I'm a huge believer in things happening for a reason. So I never look back at my mistakes as mistakes. I think they're building blocks. They're experiences that I needed to go through and lessons that I had to learn in order to become the person I am and have the skills that enable me to bring ideas into fruition and pursue the goals that I set for myself. Anyway, that was a cute personal takeaway that I wanted to share with all of you today in case anyone out there is struggling with perfectionism and is paralyzed by fear. Fear of the unknown, fear of how things might turn out, fear of being judged by others. And one thing I've learned about fear is that it's our ego trying to protect us from the unknown by keeping us in a safe and familiar environment. And I think seeing fear as this protection mechanism really helps you reframe your perception of it and understand that it's okay. In fact, it's absolutely essential to feel fear and do things anyway. Things won't always work out the way you expect them to. And that's okay, because sometimes they work out even better. But we can only see that in retrospect. You can only connect the dots looking backwards. And I know how much you want to have a peek into the future so that you can have reassurance that the sacrifices you're making in the present moment are getting you closer to your desires. But the thing about faith is you have to have this blind belief in something that you cannot see. I have been going through some major changes over the past couple of years, and I don't think it's just me. I'm noticing that a lot of my friends who are similar age to me are going through similar experiences. And I think it's this transition between your late 20s and early 30s where you have to really let go of your past self and the person that you thought you were going to be in your 30s. Because we all have this idea that by the time we get to 30, we will achieve all of these things. And then we get to 30 and it's very far from the truth. We still feel like children and we're supposed to be acting like adults in the real world. So there is this grieving process, and I've had to come to terms with the fact that life isn't going to be the same as it used to be. And that felt really scary and unexpected. And I think because I felt really scared, I tried to romanticize my 30s, and I kept looking for evidence from people in their 30s who said that life is amazing. And, you know, I still think that's the case, but I think you have to go through some challenges before you get to fully enjoy being that age. And I noticed that the more I was trying to fight this feeling of inadequacy and run away from the fear of getting older, the harder it was for me to enjoy the present moment. And that just happened to create a lot of unnecessary resistance in my life. So now I'm learning to embrace this new chapter and accept the fact that even though I thought I would know what I'm doing with my life at this point, I actually don't, and I'm not the only one, and it's okay not to know, and you don't have to have it all figured out. There is this notion that you have to have achieved a certain level of success by the time you're 30, whether that's having a family, having your dream career, starting a successful business, owning a home, or all of the above. If you really want to put that much pressure on yourself. And, you know, looking at my life, I don't have a family. I haven't built my dream business. I do have a career that I feel very successful in, but it does feel like I'm slacking in other areas of my life. But here's the thing. Life is not a checklist, and conforming to societal pressures can only lead to you feeling frustrated and unsatisfied with your own life based on somebody else's idea of what it should look like. And if I can leave you with one thing today, it's that if you are to follow any checklist, you have to make sure that it's your own. You see, following a certain formula does not guarantee that you're going to feel happy when you reach this supposedly desired outcome, because if the desire wasn't yours in the first place and it was just planted in your head by somebody else who made you believe that it's going to make you feel happy, you will reach that outcome and realize that it feels empty. And most of the time, the reason for that is because you didn't want it in the first place, and you actually sacrificed a lot to get to that outcome. My grandmother, who is 80, God bless her, has always wanted to see me get married. That's like one of her biggest dreams, and I would absolutely love for her to witness that and be there when my children are born. But as much as I want that to happen, I've also had to come to terms with the fact that she might not be around when that happens. And, you know, as sad as it is, I would rather find the right person who has the same values as me, who wants to raise our children in the same way that I do. And I would much rather be patient and take my time finding the right person than rush into something just because of her. Because at the end of the day, she won't get to stay here for much longer, but I will. And I have to prioritize myself in that instance. Savage, I know. But unfortunately, it's not something I have control over. And instead of putting pressure on myself, I would rather focus on having meaningful experiences with my grandmother while she's still alive that I can cherish when she's no longer with us. And speaking of fears, I am aware that a lot of people find the idea of death very uncomfortable, and it's a topic that we don't really like to discuss. It's one of the reasons we fear getting older, because the older we get, the more likely we are to lose our parents, our grandparents, and the more we age, the closer we get to it ourselves. And so we avoid thinking and talking about it at all costs. And I want to remind you of this quote. We all have two lives, and the second one begins when we realize we only have one. And, you know, I'm not necessarily comfortable with the idea of dying myself. I would love to live forever. Actually, maybe not. That's a whole other topic. I could do a whole episode on that, but let's not get distracted. I am trying to get more comfortable with the idea because I think it's inevitable, first of all, and accepting that I'm not here forever actually helps me mobilize when I'm feeling that fear of the unknown and the fear of, you know, starting fresh, starting something that I'm not familiar with, getting out of my comfort zone. I wouldn't want to get to that stage and look back at my life and think, oh shit, I wish I did that earlier. I wish I realized that I'm gonna get to this point one day and regret not doing these things. So, you know, acknowledging and accepting that this is inevitable can actually be very freeing as well. So there is a positive aspect to death. And I'm someone who always looks at the positive side of things. So trust me to find the one positive thing about the worst thing that everyone's afraid of. Oh, wow. I had no intention of this episode steering in that direction. It turned out to be very profound. But, you know, it's very much unscripted. I am just going with the flow and seeing what comes up. And, you know, it's like I've plugged into this source and I'm receiving these messages right now and just like transferring them to you. And I'm sorry if this sounds weird or woo-woo to you, but since I've been spending a lot of time at home and away from social media, I've had a lot more time to meditate and journal, and my thoughts are just flowing like rivers. Since we are on the topic of fear today, I thought that aside from these big existential fears like the fear of getting old or the fear of losing our loved ones, I wanted to talk about these other fears. And, you know, I mentioned some of them in the beginning of this episode, like fear of the unknown, fear of starting something new, fear of looking stupid. But there was one other fear that I wanted to talk about today that I have been feeling lately, and I just wanted to see if anyone out there relates. So in my first episode about heartbreak, I spoke about my last relationship and how 6 months after I ended it, I found out that my ex had been cheating on me for 6 months while we were still together. And I think that had a huge impact on my ability to trust people, especially men. And I don't really believe that anyone has pure intentions towards me, because I was in that relationship for 9 years. And, you know, the feeling of betrayal and knowing that all of our friends knew about this going on and I didn't have a clue just made me feel really stupid at the time. And I think I still haven't been able to shake off those feelings. And I think I've come to a stage now where I have this fear of intimacy, and I would avoid getting close to someone out of fear that they will do the exact same thing. And you know, people say when the right person comes along, you won't be feeling that fear. But I'm actually so scared that if the right person comes along, I won't even be able to notice because of that fear. See, there's all of these different aspects of that fear that feed into the way I'm feeling. And there's the fear of intimacy that's actually making it hard for me to get close to someone, and not allowing myself to do that is fueling the fear that I might miss out on the right person when they come along. And if I keep missing out on the right people, does that mean I'm going to be alone forever? Because if so, then I'm scared of that too. And even if I assume that the right person is absolutely bulletproof and nothing about me will make them run away, I still can't do anything to control that fear. And it's creating a lot of resistance. And I'm finding it really hard to relax, you know. I don't feel like I'm even open to dating, because every time I decided to give it a shot in the past couple of years, it's just turned out to be a disaster. And at this point, I just feel like I'm sabotaging myself, you know. I get with these people, I don't communicate my needs, even though I know I should be doing that. And I just fall back into my old familiar patterns and behaviors. And I'm afraid that eventually I'll just have to admit that I'm broken and there's nothing I can do to fix myself. And that kind of sucks, because it makes me feel helpless. It makes me feel like, regardless of what I do and how much effort I put into it, I just won't be able to have a partner, have a healthy partner, actually, because it's not just about having a partner, you know. I've been in unhealthy relationships my whole life, and I would like to know what a healthy one feels like. The saddest part is that sometimes I would just talk like I will never find the right person, and I've come to accept that maybe I'm not deserving of having a partner, and that is scary too. My therapist sent me a worksheet recently about challenging anxious thoughts that's supposed to help you manage your anxiety by spotting irrational thoughts and replacing them with more rational alternatives. And it asks you to describe a common situation that triggers your anxiety and then list three possible outcomes: worst, best, and likely. And I gave the example of using public transport in rush hour, because that's one of the most anxiety-inducing situations for me. And I would sometimes avoid taking the tube in rush hour. I would prefer to take a bus, even though it's a longer journey, or I would sometimes have to get an Uber just to completely avoid being around people, because that's how anxious I feel about having so many people around me. And the worst possible outcome for me would be having a panic attack. The best possible outcome would be less people using the tube than usual, and the likely outcome is that I would have to wait for an emptier train for a few minutes. And then it proceeds to ask you, if the worst outcome does come true, would it matter 1 week from now, 1 month from now, or a year from now? And you know, when it comes to me having a panic attack, I only remember having one major panic attack where I had to go out of the station and just seek an alternative mode of transport. And I do still remember it, but it doesn't really affect my well-being to such a major extent. But if I was to use the example of my anxiety around finding a healthy partner and the worst possible scenario of me being single forever, would it matter a year from now? Maybe not. But 5 years from now? Absolutely. If I'm single in 5 years' time, I would be freaking out, honestly. And you know, I just listened back to what I said there about this belief that I'm not deserving of a healthy partner. And that's something that I need to reframe, but I'm not really sure how to go about it. And it's definitely not helping my situation. I acknowledge that. And I also accept the fact that this belief has so much evidence when I look back at my previous relationships. So it's normal for me to be feeling this way. And again, I don't really know how to shift that perspective. I said earlier that I'm someone who always looks at the positive side of things, but in this particular situation, I am really struggling. And, you know, if we were to read a book right now about being self-sufficient, oh, it's so funny that this is the name of my podcast. If we were to read a book about being self-sufficient, I would be ticking all the boxes because I know how to take care of myself and I know how to treat myself. I know how I want to be treated by others and I always set the example. I don't tolerate disrespect the way I used to and I'm okay with being alone. I love taking myself out on dates. I love spending time by myself. But if I'm okay with being alone, if I'm really okay with that, would I even be considering this possibility that I won't find the right person? Would I be scared of it? I don't know. You see how I'm scared of being alone, but I'm also scared of being vulnerable. And I know exactly what I can do to change that situation, but I'm also scared of taking the actions as well. And I keep finding these excuses, and in my opinion, they're very valid. My therapist agrees as well, for not using dating apps, for example, because I am sick and tired of the hookup culture. And I also don't think that people are honest about their intentions on there. And I made a decision a while ago that I didn't want to meet my future partner on a dating app. But then how do I put myself out there? And how do I make sure that I'm open to possibilities? You know, I've always been very self-analytical and self-aware, so I've done a lot of work on myself. But, you know, sometimes you can do all the work and know how things work in theory, but unless you apply them in real life and you get into a relationship and see how things work, there's no way to know. I came across this quote on social media earlier today that still being single at 32 just means that you've statistically avoided your first divorce. And it's funny how single people will find a way to make themselves feel better about being single. And I think probably married people do the same. I have a lot of friends who got married when they were in their 20s and they have kids now, and they probably want to do the things that I am doing and travel the world and work towards their dream career, but they don't necessarily have that opportunity, and they probably try to find different ways to make themselves feel better about that by saying, oh, it's so nice to be married and have a family, you know, at least you have someone to go back to and you've got the support of someone when you're going through difficulties. And, you know, I don't know if it's better to be single or in a couple. I would rather just be at peace, whatever that means. But I think as humans, we've just been wired for connection. And I have always been a relationship person. And I really miss having someone who can share responsibilities with me, who can make me smile when I'm going through difficulties and make me feel better when I make silly mistakes, and someone who will actually appreciate the things that I do for them without taking advantage of my kind and loving nature. And you know, for the longest time ever, I thought there was something wrong with admitting that. I thought that it would make me appear weak if I admit that I do want a relationship. And a few weeks ago, when I was going through a bit of a rough patch, I FaceTimed my grandmother one day and I was crying. And when she answered, she said, "Tell me what's wrong. Do you need a boyfriend?" And for 30 minutes, I just refused to admit that maybe that's the problem. And I cried and cried and cried. And then when we ended the call, I was like, is she right? Is she onto something? Because I didn't want to admit that, but it made me so emotional that I really started questioning it. You know, I looked back at the events of the past few months and I realized that I've been attracting all of these emotionally unavailable men. And then I asked myself, am I emotionally available? And if I have to be really, really, really brutally honest with myself, no, I'm not. Because I've been scared. I've been scared to let someone close. I've been scared to open up. I've been scared that I'm going to get hurt or rejected. So I haven't been communicating. I haven't been honest about what I need from a man. And I've been playing it safe and cool. And, you know, when you want to find the right person for you, this isn't necessarily the right approach. Because when you're playing it cool about things that you're not okay with, right from the start, you're showing the other person that you are willing to overstep your own boundaries. And guess what? They're going to do the same. So after a couple of dating disappointments towards the end of last year, I decided to give myself a break from dating apps once again. Like I mentioned earlier, I've always had this love-hate relationship with them. And I've always said that I don't think I'll find my person on a dating app, but I decided to give them a chance on a few occasions. And, you know, I met some really nice people, but they weren't my people. But I've always really struggled to find like a genuine connection with someone on a dating app. And once dating apps were no longer in the picture, I decided that I will either meet people in real life or I will just take a break from dating. And I think I've been too stressed to date. I haven't necessarily found the time. I haven't been in the right headspace. And I had a chat with a friend on the phone last week and I said to her, I don't feel like I'm ready for a relationship. But at the same time, I want to be in one. So how does one prepare themselves? I'm not a huge fan of forcing things, especially when it comes to relationships. I don't think we should ever be forcing ourselves to date when we don't feel like it. But I'm also noticing that it's now become my comfort zone and I would just find excuses not to do it. And I don't think that's very healthy either. So I'm really trying to find that balance, that sweet spot in between where I'm open to dating, I'm not necessarily looking for it, but I'm also okay with opportunities presenting themselves. And if anyone's been able to find that sweet spot, please give me a shout. Tell me your secrets. Let me know how you're getting on. And because I'm not someone who likes to talk about things and complain without the intention of taking any action, I have decided to create a little 5-step plan for myself. And because I'm not selfish, I will share it with you in case you're feeling stuck like me and need some ideas on where to start. And the first step is really simple. It's actually just admitting and acknowledging what your wants and needs are when it comes to relationships. And this episode is my attempt in doing that. So I hope it inspires you in some way to be more open and vulnerable. Step two is something that me and my therapist agreed on doing together. And it's to look at my childhood experiences and how they shaped my perception of love and my attachment style and how my unmet needs are showing up in my life in the form of coping mechanisms today. Step three is to get really clear on what I want and need from a relationship, how I want to feel, what my boundaries are, what I'm looking for in a partner, so I can communicate that clearly. And I'm planning to do that by journaling and really figuring out what's important to me. Step four is to work on nurturing my relationship with myself and honoring my needs so that when I meet someone, I'm not expecting them to do that for me, but instead I'm showing them an example of how I want to be treated. And step five is to sign up to experiences, try new hobbies, meet new people, and tell my friends that I'm open to the idea of dating in case they have any single friends they want to introduce me to. Maybe I wouldn't even have to do that if they're listening to this right now. So wink, wink. Okay, friends, once again, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the Self-Sufficient Podcast. I cannot wait to see where this journey takes us all. And I'm very excited to have you as part of the community. Again, don't forget to share this episode with anyone you think might benefit from it. And of course, don't forget to come back next week.